is. All right, we're recording. What's up, everybody? It's Cakes No Breaks podcast. It's probably be my fourth episode. Pretty new to this still. And just trying to get into the rhythm of things and bring you some good conversation, some things to think about. Today's guest is a long childhood friend of mine by the name of Andy Stevenson. He's got a background in mechanical engineering, along with other programs, which I can't even tell you what they are. But he did say BIM specialist. I'm sure he'll explain that here in a little bit, what a BIM specialist is. But yeah, and he's an artist himself. This guy, he does all kinds of stuff, painting, making music. He actually did his own podcast, never released it, but it was with family. You know, he's pretty cool. That was probably about, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
He did that.
Yeah. At least three, probably about 3 years ago.
Maybe. Yeah. So, man, I like the hat, man. He's wearing the hundreds right there. Old school. When did you first find out about the hundreds, man? Was
shoot. I'd say, I don't know. God, I've had this hat for actually a while, for a minute. I'd say probably, somewhere around 10 years ago, something like that. Yeah. It seems like. Maybe not quite that long, but... But yeah, I've known him for a minute.
Yeah.
Since they came out when it was hot.
You know him like personally?
No, I don't.
Are you just figuratively speaking knew yeah. about them?
Right.
No, it's a cool hat for you guys listening. You guys can't see what he's wearing. It's an old, it's like a dad's hat, like a pop hat with the five panels, and then it's got ink kind of splattered over it, like a blue, orange, green, and then in the front is that hundreds bomb. That original little patch right there. I like it. I hope we can do something like that for Cakes one of these days.
Yeah.
But man, so I wanted to have you on the podcast because, you know, just forever we've always had good conversations. And for the listeners, I guess that are interested maybe in what you're doing as far as a mechanical engineer and like a BIM specialist, what is like your day consist of from like Monday to Friday? Kind of projects are you working on, pressures you're dealing with, and obstacles that come up, and how do you work through those with a group of people?
I basically live in the engineering world, so if anybody out there even has worked in an office with engineers or designers, I mean, you'd get the story, but I grew up basically out of high school. My two top disciplines were math and art, and I essentially just chose something and went with it, and took up drafting because I couldn't figure out exactly what I wanted to do, so I went for that, and then I got my associate's degree. And pretty much have been in a wide array of engineering disciplines ever since school. So, I mean, I've touched pretty much, a lot of different disciplines, civil, electrical.
These are all programs? What do you mean by disciplines?
Disciplines as in different engineering fields,
got it.
So whether it's a lot of things will start civil, you know, you'll need your plot plan and your points and all that stuff, I did a lot of electrical, did a lot of you name it, telecom. Ooh. I mean, just every type of a field really that there is in engineering, seems like. But
were you able to express your artistic side in all of those disciplines, or were some of them just more science and dull math engineering, you know, stuff to where you didn't get to really get into the art as much?
That's a good question, because I still kind of try to figure that out myself. I don't f- feel like I get to express my artistic side all too often, which kind of is always an internal question to me if I'm, you know, and I try to do stuff on the side to get that out outside of work. But where I'm currently at, I feel like I'm getting definitely moments of expressing more of my artistic side. I definitely have an attention for detail and an eye for it. Being in the industry for 20 years, you know, things stick out like a sore thumb to me if it's not done right, and I'm a perfectionist in a certain aspect. So yeah, I feel like I have a really good eye for detail. And
so are you in your space, are you helping others learn more than you're actually implementing yourself, or is it just a nice mix of all of that to where you're helping guide people, but you're also implementing and I guess, you know, like getting through your projects? You know, I'm sure there's obstacles and like ways to be more efficient, I guess, is what I'm asking. And because, you know, as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, well, what is, you know, because I never went to work with you, but you kind of talk about it here and there. We don't talk about this often, by the way. This is kind of something that we're just diving deep into now for this podcast, which is cool because I've always wanted to know, but we've always got so much other stuff we're kind of catching up on, you know, family, personal, you know, that kind of thing. And we never really get to talk like in depth about work and, you know, what Andy does as far as,
mystery.
The mystery, you know, the artistic, he's kind of, you know, brought me in on a couple of projects and kind of, you know, painted a picture on what he was working with, which is pretty cool. Can you talk about any of like the cool projects that you've been included in and like what, you know, what your role was and maybe one or two of the major obstacles you guys had to get over and how you guys were able to do that, you know, as a team or?
Sure. I'll kind of back up a little bit. I've been currently with the company that I'm at, which is a mechanical company, for a little over a year and a half now. So it's actually, mechanical is a new discipline that I've kind of found myself in, I guess you could say. Before that, you know, it was actually an MEP company, which is mechanical, electrical, plumbing. And as a multi-discipline firm, they also have, you know, fire alarm and fire safety discipline as well. And, you know, a lot of those projects we did were high-paced. We'd have anywhere from, you know, 10, 15 projects, which all had different stages. And, I was basically the guy, well, I guess to start even before that, back when it was just AutoCAD, and now it's 3D and Revit, which I've always been a proponent of moving towards 3D. I mean, right when I got out of school,
yeah,
I knew,
3D sounds cool.
I knew everything was going to be
interesting
3D, and I've always been a big proponent of it. So the company I was at right before the one I'm at now, I was there for just shy of 3 years, and that's where I gained a lot of my BIM expertise. And when I got hired on there, I didn't know exactly what I was be doing, but I got stuck with plumbing. I learned a lot about plumbing. And, you know, I worked for a guy who actually just recently retired, and he didn't really know AutoCAD too well. Definitely didn't know any Revit, which is the program that we, create our drawings with, which is 3D. And so I gained a lot of my experience there. There was just a lot of different projects going on. So I would actually assemble all the drawings. I'd create the drawings. I'd get the models from the architects, you know, clean them up, get them ready for our model, you know, basically layer that into our 3D model, and then we would put mechanical, you know, ducting, air handlers, whatever, you know, anything mechanical, plumbing, electrical, all that stuff. And we'd assemble a drawing package and then, you know, send it out along with the architects to build for construction. Mm. So, yeah, I essentially help people if they don't know how to run the program or do different things in the command. So while I'm putting these packages together, people ask me, hey, I don't know how to do this. So I gotta, you know, drop what I'm doing, go to the desk, give them a little, you know, show them how to do it, and then hop back and
Multitasking.
A lot of multitasking.
Breaks of focus, which I don't do really well with myself, but it's not like you do better with it. Patience.
Yeah, I can get you. And especially if there's if it's high pace and you got, you know, a lot of projects going on at the same time. But, you know, a lot, it builds a high, a reputable, once you in day in and day out and you're just doing this, you become pretty good at the program. So, nice. I've touched a little bit on, some cool projects, and some of that stuff is pretty interesting. When you see some cool stuff come by, and I guess one of the projects now that's pretty cool, I'm actually just getting to go out in the field and, not knowing a whole bunch, and not having an engineering degree, I come from basically the work experience, but I'm finally gotten to myself where I'm going out on site, I'm looking at the room, I'm taking pictures, and then I'm coming back and I'm drawing it up exactly how it's done. And
is there a lot of visualization in there to where when you're in the room, and you don't have, do you have your programs with you in the field? Or are you just basically visualizing it all, taking mental notes, and then you have to go back and then put it all in?
Oh yeah.
And how you see it.
Yep. Yeah. So you take pictures, you know, you get the, you know, so basically you go into a mechanical room, which I'm not sure, you know, if, you know, most people probably don't go in those rooms.
Right.
but it's just a lot of piping and, a lot of equipment that you have no idea what it is until you learn what it is. But there's a lot to learn. And, so you take pictures.
So like industrial or like residential. So you're talking about big, big pieces of pipe, like 15 inches, 16 inch rounds, or what? 25. What are we?
Every size there is. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. And so one of the projects I'm working on right now is out at Nike. That's one of their bigger buildings. And
Nike, okay.
So that's fun.
So they're having you do the plumbing for Nike?
It's mechanical and plumbing.
Mechanical and plumbing, got it.
Yeah, and we're basically replacing.
What's the difference between those two? Mechanical is for?
That's actually a great question, because a lot of times they're kind of tied together. Essentially, plumbing is just everything that's tied to water.
Water, right.
Like on the water side, your sinks, your toilets, your showers, your all that stuff is all strictly plumbing.
Plumbing.
But mechanical also has plumbing or piping associated with like a fan coil unit, you know, and condensate piping, all that stuff. But there's enough plumbing in a building to basically have your own, discipline. Because there's enough sinks in a building, there's enough, whatever you got. So, but it's pretty closely tied with mechanical stuff.
Oh, okay. So was Tesla ever like, an idol of yours? Did you study Tesla, man? Cause I mean, he did it with electricity. Is there any common ground between piping, mechanical engineering, electricity, all that stuff? Is it similar in a way? Or I'm sure the math is. I mean, that's everywhere. That's universal. But
yeah, you know, Tesla. That's a good one. I actually wasn't in the field of mechanical or plumbing, but I did actually work on the Gigafactory out in Reno, out by Reno.
What?
Which was pretty cool.
Yeah. I remember you telling me about that Gigafactory.
Yeah, that's
so. What was behind the Gigafactory? What were they trying to do out there? Were they storing aliens out there? They got alien brains. They were.
That I did not know. Actually, I never got to go out there. But
the Gigafactory just sounds like they're up to something. The Gigafactory.
Well, I think that's where they make. And I'm not quite sure, but I think that's where they make a lot of the batteries and all that stuff.
Oh, okay.
But it's, at the time, it was the biggest manufacturing plant in the world going up. And I don't know whether that holds true now or, you know, if they're still expanding on it. I mean, that was many years ago when I was working on it.
It's probably before Mr. Musk stepped down. Remember he had to step down?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, that was probably before that.
This was like 6 years ago, something like that.
Speaking of batteries, man, have you heard about hemp being involved in making like a way superior battery? I don't know how they're doing it. Yeah, I came across an article about they're using hemp now.
Really?
And it's making some...
Hell yeah.
Way superior batteries. Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. The hemp industry just come in out of, you know, this last year here in Oregon. Andy and I, you know, in the Northwest, hemp is everywhere. You drive down I-5, it's just like, see fields of it.
I don't know if it's hemp, but yeah,
you smell it in the city.
Croptober.
Yeah. Season. Sobroctober, Croptober. I haven't been as disciplined. I haven't been drinking as much for the whole Croptober. Or no, Sober October. Yeah, I was like, I'm going to do that. Well, I was thinking about it, and I just, I just haven't been able to discipline myself enough just to not to have a drink when we're socializing. You know? But maybe one of these days I'll participate in the Sober October. Yeah. But, going back to the batteries, so the gig, man, tell us about the Gigafactory. What was like when you first rolled up on the Gigafactory? What was that like?
Actually, I never went on site. So
oh,
I
you didn't go
I
on site.
I don't really know. I just know that was actually in that's kind of what led me into leaving the place I was at for 12 years, the company I was working with on that project. Well, one of the contributing factors, but we were obviously using Revit on that project.
Okay.
Revit. They had tons of money to spend.
So, real quick, Revit, in a quick synopsis, what the heck is Revit?
So Revit is basically a 3D program.
Okay, 3D.
Yeah, that draws pretty much anything and everything that engineering-wise that turns it into a 3D model.
And that's what the investors like to see. They want to see a 3D model of what they're investing in.
It's definitely, I mean, it's definitely got the kind of, you know, future
display and appeal. I feel like I just keep picturing like a scene from a movie where you have all these board members sitting and they just have this hologram of a city. It's like a mini city that just sitting there on their table and they're like, all right, this gentleman is what we're going to be investing in.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, technology is moving quick.
Yeah.
So in our company right now, our headquarters is up in Seattle, but we've got this thing called the M-Lab and I really want to be...
M-Lab, okay.
It's called the M-Lab and what you do, and all this stuff kind of hit me this last year, but it's where virtual reality
VR
comes into play.
Some crazy stuff, man.
And right now, let's say if you know you got a building going up and it's, you know, getting ready to go out for construction, you're still working on stuff and the owner wants to see how things visually are going to look before it's built, or you know, get a buy off on it, so we'll bring them in and we'll put on a VR headset, and what they're doing is basically walking through a virtual reality of the models that we produce in Revit, and you're basically walking down a hallway looking at, for our example, mechanical ducting or pipe or, you know, whatever that you need to coordinate.
I'd probably be looking for the snack machine. Like, where's the snack machine?
Yeah, architects will have that in there.
Yeah.
And it's super, super valuable because let's say for like, let's take the example of like a chef, you know, he wants a new kitchen.
Right.
Well, you can basically design all this stuff in a 3D program, put the virtual headset on, look down and say, okay, I got my knives on the left here. I've got, you know, and you're like, I really need my spices over on the right hand side or whatever, you know, okay. And it gives you a real feel for how it's going to be.
So now you can communicate. Yeah, you can communicate with a chef. Like, you don't have to talk about it. You guys can look at it.
Yeah.
And just like point it out. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. So wow. It's good spatially. I mean, you can always see that stuff like on paper, but to kind of be immersed into it, is pretty cool actually. And so, finally, art and all that stuff that I've always been interested in is kind of creeping its way up into my field.
Nice, man. I like to hear that. I remember we'd have conversations and you'd just be like, man, I just want, you know, it's just a drag sometimes going through with work because there wasn't that yeah. art side of it, that creative side of it. It was just kind
of
trenching through the mud.
Yeah.
And now you fast forward to now, and these cool opportunities that come up. The Northwest is like crazy, like Portland, just how fast, you know, construction and just what they've done there and in Salem. You see Salem is just...
Oh, it's a trickle-down effect for sure.
Yeah, it's...
But I remember, Portland, Seattle is definitely one of the booming places, I think. I mean, I knew like 6-7 months ago, we had the most cranes going up for construction for, you know, bigger buildings going up.
I remember that. You just drive through Seattle, cranes everywhere.
Yeah. Like, Seattle and Portland had the most out of the whole United States, so...
Like, can I get a crane for my site? Nope, Seattle's got them all.
Yeah, you gotta request that stuff super far in advance.
You got them all.
Yeah.
Wow. It's amazing. So this project, tell me a little bit more about the M... Did you say the M?
It's called the M Lab.
The M Lab. So what did you say they're going to be doing there?
It's basically just a room that you can walk in and use your 3D goggles.
Is it going to be for the general public or for business?
It's for our clients that are, you know, building a new project, whether it's we're retrofitting a space and they want to see how things are going to look.
Oh, okay.
Kind of a thing.
Got it.
But yeah. And I'd say one of the other really cool projects that I'm pretty excited about is building like one of the, it's like a 36 story building in downtown Portland. Mm-hmm. So to be a part of that, it's pretty cool, you know?
Like an office building or you know what?
It's a mixed use building. So, okay. It's going right downtown. It's actually taking over, the cart block.
Okay.
Oh, if you remember where 11th, all the carts.
11th?
Right on 10th and, 10th. Yeah.
10th and 11th. Yeah, right there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's going to be pretty, pretty cool. It's actually been pretty cool, but yeah.
Nice, man. You want to switch gears here? You want to talk about some other things, man? I could go deep and keep asking you a whole lot of questions about...
It's all nerdy talk, bro. Yeah. We're going to nerd out.
We did the nerd out part. So you know, one of the things I'm really into is just mind hacking, body hack, just how, like, us as humans, we get stuck in, like, ways that we can get through it. And a lot of times it's just mental. It's just like really digging deep into your thoughts, you know, like your thoughts, you know, everything that we do every day, you have to think about it first, right? And so, and then some of those things are subconscious and you're like, well, I don't think about that. I just do it, like walking. You know, a lot of people aren't thinking, okay, I'm going to take this step and then I'm going to take this step. And you just take it for granted that you're able to walk because you've done it so many times. And I guess my question is to you, is there any cool like mind hacks or anything that you've been implementing or using in the last, I'd say, couple months that have really changed your ability to just, I guess, be more efficient in your life? Being so, I didn't say this earlier, but you know, Andy's a father, so he's got his two children, and he's a working full time up in Portland, commutes quite a bit, and so he's got all that. So he's spread out a little bit, and so I'm sure that can cause some obstacles on, you know, in the way that you want to function. And so I guess that's what my question is, like, is there any good, you know, mind hacks or things that you've read about to help you?
Like maybe,
yeah, maybe even just in the last year, maybe the last 2 months is just too short of a time. But in the last year, you know, what has really helped you get ahead, get organized, get feel better physically, mentally, emotionally, all of that?
Yeah. And like you said, I commute. So I live basically here in Salem and I commute to Portland. So I spend a lot of the time on the road. I guess with mind hack stuff,
you meditate?
I need to more.
So you do, you just don't do it as often as you'd like.
Yeah, I definitely want to say I do, but it's one thing that I need to set more time for. And I guess the top thing that helps me is pretty much what everybody would think would be, is to just kind of get your exercise in when you can. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what I do. I mean,
get you momentum.
Yeah, it feels like it just kind of oils my system, keeps me, you know, thinking fresh, keeps my system active, keeping the oil clean, you know? But yeah, I think that helps a lot, and it's hard because there's always excuses, there's always these setbacks, you know? Mm-hmm. But I find like getting back on and sticking to something is really important, because there's so many different stresses out there in life.
Right.
You got kids, you got, you know.
Yeah, kid, yeah.
You know, different life comes relationships, at you quick. Family, you got, you know, yeah, job stress, everything.
Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face by life.
Right? Yes. And even then, you know, you gotta take it and jump back on and not get discouraged. And so one of the things which I was never good at as a kid was running. And and I don't have any tattoos or anything, but I have one drawn that I have had drawn for like 20 years when I would still get it.
Do you have any tattoos?
I don't have any tattoos. No, I'm okay. Clean. And
got a virgin over here.
Got a virgin. I'm a virgin. Tattoo virgin. Because I feel like if I get one, I'll probably just get a whole bunch and I'll be addicted. So I haven't yet jumped into it. But anyway, that tattoo that I have drawn.
What is it? A cheetah? Running?
It's a whole bunch of different stuff. But basically, it's got this world, and on the very bottom is this little stick figure,
okay,
kind of running like on a
treadmill.
Like on a wheel, okay, mouse that you'd see on a wheel.
Hamster wheel.
And to me, that symbolizes. And there's all these different meanings in this tattoo, but I always think of this because, in order for me to feel good, I feel like I need to keep running to mm-hmm. keep my world going, you know, mm-hmm. the way I want.
Okay.
And so that's just an analogy, and going back to running.
Is it your heart rate or is it the act of running, getting your heart rate to
the act of running? Because like you said, you go out on walks and stuff and you get all these thoughts, right?
Right.
To me, it's running. I go out and run and I think all this stuff. I don't bring anything with me. I don't listen to music. I listen to my breathing.
Okay.
And I just, that's my time to like grind stuff
Interesting.
out.
Why don't you listen to any music?
I don't listen to it because I like to listen to the way I breathe. Uh-huh. I think that's very important. I've been always a big proponent of mastering your breath work. And
does the way you breathe ever change, or is it pretty consistent and always sounds
feels
the same?
If I listen to music like on a treadmill or something like that, I can't really, maybe I just like to be in tune with my breath and know exactly how I'm breathing, if I'm breathing hard or if I, you know, and it gives me a chance to
tune in better,
in and tune over that stuff, you know?
I guess I've tried both. Running, no headphones, just me, my thoughts, my breathing, and I like it. The first time I had heard of someone talking about that was David Goggins, and he was in his book You Can't Hurt Me. And shout out David Goggins, man, really good book. If you haven't heard that book or read that book, I would recommend the podcast or the audio book, because he did a podcast / audio book all in one. So not only is someone reading you the book, then after each chapter, David Goggins will further speak about in depth in emotion about what, you know, he was going through at that time in his life. There's this one part where he was just basically talking about running and listening to music, and he said that, you know, listening to music is cheating. And
yeah.
I was like, what do you mean cheating? And he's like, yeah, listening to music is cheating because that's, you know, you're using it as motivation. Really, you should be disciplined enough to use your own mind as motivation and inspiration and that kind of thing. And just to get it done all on your own. It's all organic, you know, in the grit of it.
It's true.
You know, you're not always going to have a headphone with some music playing. So you got to be prepared to power through that without the music playing. Mm-hmm. And that definitely resonated with me. And I've been doing that myself, actually, running without music. And now sometimes I'll just do light walks. Like Andy was saying earlier, I'll just go on a walk and I'll take my phone with me. And I just talk to my phone in the notes app, and then it writes out the notes for you. Like if I have a good idea, I'll be like, you know, whatever. Today I'm struggling with this, and this. And, you know, but I did see and change the perspective, you know, later on to this, you know, A, B, or C. And then it's good to go back and I'll be able to see my notes and edit them and kind of reflect.
It's like journaling almost.
Yeah, like journaling without actually sitting there and writing writing it per se with a pen or pencil, which that's good too.
It's like the new way of journaling. Like,
right, you know, I think so.
It's easier, you know, because you can speak right into the microphone on the notes program, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, speak right into it. I mean, it doesn't capture everything perfectly, obviously. It's doing its best, so you'll have to go through and edit the notes.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's part of it. As you're editing, you're like, oh, I got an idea, you know? Like,
well, it gets you to speak clearly as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, gets you to speak more clearly, exactly.
Yeah.
So running and not running. Listening to music, that's one of your mind hacks that you've kind of really been focusing in on for the last year. So why weren't you running when you were a kid? What was... Because you did play basketball.
Well,
you were active.
Yeah, I
mean,
was active.
You were out there.
I
played basketball, football, baseball. I remember.
I guess in just all the sports, the running part of those, of the sports, it was always, you know, I was always like, I wasn't the fastest. I wasn't, you know, I was like, you know, third from last being, you know, across the finish line on sprints or whatever, you
okay.
know?
Yeah.
And until I hit like 21, 22, you know,
was
basically looking at a picture of myself.
What did the picture look like?
It wasn't good. It
Describe
wasn't good.
It to the people. What'd you look like?
It just, yeah, man, it's just, you know, you see yourself.
Did you feel overweight or something?
I felt overweight and I just didn't like it. And
you changed it, it sounds like.
I changed it because I'm like, you know what? I'm tired of looking like this.
Yeah.
And I cut out, which I pretty much ever since then, I mean, I never drank a whole bunch of soda, but I was like, I cut out soda completely, just drank water.
Right.
And I ran, I chose to run every day and I dropped 50 pounds.
Oh.
Just from those two things, you know?
Yeah, it's huge. Soda's crazy how much just dropping that one thing will do.
Yeah.
It's that fructose corn syrup, man.
Oh, for sure.
Kill your brain cells, people. Don't drink it.
Yeah. And so from that moment forward, it made me appreciate running, you know? I actually felt like I got faster from that time than I even was in high school, you know?
Nice, yeah.
But yeah, I just developed a love for it and yeah, that in basketball, and I still play basketball, and I've always loved basketball, you know.
Nice. Yeah, I know you were playing on some leagues up there in Portland, and while I was playing, I haven't played in a while in a league. I know you continued to keep playing, and even coaching. Weren't you coaching Fergus? We got what's the cat's name? The cat just jumped up on the table.
Blaze
was trying to get some attention. He came and rubbed up.
He heard basketball. He's like,
basketball? What? That's my game. Yeah. So, what's it been like to have been coached in basketball and then move fast forward to now coaching some of these kids in basketball? How's that experience been for you?
It's been good, man. My dad actually coached me when I was a kid. In most of the sports I played, I was a three sport kid from the age of five all the way up until high school, and my dad pretty much coached me up until he could, right around actually the sixth grade, and then I was playing middle school sports, stuff like that. But growing up as the coach's kid, there's all kinds of different stories out there. You're always favored, you're always doing this. Well, there's all, everyone has a different story, but my dad was, I know the things that I did like, and I know the things I didn't like.
It sounds like there's some things you didn't like.
He's just...
We want to know, what didn't you like, particularly? What did he do?
Well, you know,
was he hard on you and just like make you feel like you weren't good enough?
Well, a lot of people think coaches' kids get the easy route.
Okay.
Get the easy.
Yeah, I wouldn't know, man. I didn't have a dad out there helping me coach, so I didn't get that good or bad experience. It's all neutral, at the end. But definitely interested to hear about your experience, like with, how it was. So you got that perception, the people on the outside are like, oh, you're a coach's kid, that's why you're playing. Do you hear people talking and whispering on the side or something? Like,
yeah, and I think, I don't know how long it goes back, but I'm pretty sure that was the case.
Yeah.
For, the parents even back then that were coaching, but it definitely wasn't the case. I mean, if the team wasn't doing stuff, I felt like I got punished for it, And,
Dennis was like,
so I didn't have it easy. I really didn't.
Hurry up.
Yeah.
Put some more hustle into it.
And if I did something wrong, if I missed a shot sometimes, I would just look over at my dad and see his disappointment in his face and his shrug, and it was just like, ooh.
Felt like you let him down.
So you deal with all that kind of stuff and, I don't know. I kind of rebelled in high school with sports, and it took me a while to kind of come back and find the love for it many years after high school. But I did, and I'm grateful for all the things I did.
You feel like you have a whole,
as a kid.
Do you feel like you have a whole different style of coaching than your dad did?
I do. And he even admits it, and I don't know how you do, all this stuff. You're way more calm. You're way more, you're way more patient.
How do you do it without yelling at them?
Yeah. And he gets worked up.
So you don't yell at the kids? You just, what's your approach?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think my coaching hat is hung up. Hopefully, I think my son's a freshman now. So I'm pushing. My goal is to basically do what I can on the side That's what I prefer. You know, it was nice, you know, coaching. I did it for 7 years. I took 1 year off, and then I actually went back last year when I thought I had hung up the coat, the hat, whatever. But it takes a lot of work and,
dedication, huh? You gotta
dedication.
Show up for them kiddos.
Yeah. And
help them through.
It's fun, man. It's good. Every year is different. Every year is new challenges. But it's good, man. And it's hard. I think the hardest thing is trying to find the right balance, because as a parent, you see all the things that your son's doing wrong or that he could be doing better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's blood. It's like, you know how hard he's trying, or you know how hard he's pushing or whatever. And you always want him to do more, you know? And the hardest part is trying to find the most constructive way to get some of those points across.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a true test to coaching, man, is especially if you have a...
What'd you learn about yourself through coaching these kids? Was there any good, like, aha moments, epiphanies that really stood out?
That you can't relax, man. If you want these kids to grow and learn something, then you have to put in the work. I mean, day in and day out, you know.
As a coach,
mm-hmm. for sure. You know, the moment you relax and the moment you do something and it gets stagnant, you know, kids will lose interest or whatever. And so you got to try to make things fun, exciting, while also giving them discipline. And I'm a pretty happy-go-lucky type of guy, and I think a lot of the kids enjoyed playing for me. But to keep them in line can be the hard part, because you always have some of the kids on the team that, lack of better words, and, you know, maybe some parents just want them to play and get them out there, and they might not be interested. So to get the whole team on board to listen and pay attention, stuff like that you don't think about, you know, and it'll kind of derail you from what you're really trying to accomplish and teach these kids, or for the kids that really want to, they come there to learn, you know. So you got to find a balance between that.
Yeah, because there's that hard work and just that grit, like hustle, go hard, but where does the art part come in? Like, how do you balance, you know, and show them the art form of basketball, because there really is an art to it. You have to communicate with your team. You know, there's only 5 players on the court at any one given time, and to humble yourself and know, okay, well, I'm a point guard, but you're a point guard too, and he must be a better point guard because he gets to start and I don't get a start, and maybe kids might feel some kind of way about that. How do you, you know, explain to them, you know, It's not just raw talent and about winning, but there's a real art to it too. And like, how do you convey that or get that across? And what do you work on maybe that might be, that can change their perspective?
Definitely,
you know?
Attitude,
that's a good one. Yeah.
You know, if that was the one big rule I had, if I seen any bad attitude, especially when you're out on the court, I would pull them right out and talk to them about it. And it was one thing I didn't allow.
It's contagious, huh?
Because it's very contagious.
Let it go.
Yeah, it's spreads, you know, like one thing, one bad, you know, if you get a bad call, which always happens in basketball, you mm-hmm. know, you can't control that. And the way you handle it, you can control.
Right.
And if you get upset, you know, everyone gets upset here and there, that's fine, you know, shake it off. But if you can't shake it off, then you shouldn't be out there
bringing other people down through attitude.
Yeah, you gotta be happy-go-lucky and try to have everyone get in their own rhythm. So team play is a big thing, and getting everyone to touch the ball, feel like they're a part of that team, getting that contagious positive spirit out there is way more beneficial than the other way around.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, attitude's big. As you were talking about that just now, I was starting to think about art, right? So you have the individual that comes down the court and he might have the artisan, the shake or the juke or his finesse to look one way and pass the other. You know, that's where the art form comes in as an individual and where they can express themselves as a player. But basketball is such this team sport to where it's hard to be like, yeah, do that, because then it kind of comes off as kind of like a ball hog, you know, like this kid's always trying to showboat, and then what happens, it doesn't, you know, convert, and you're leaving a team out, and there's that part of it. And so it's like you want to definitely support, you know, the art of it. Yeah, like be funky out there, get your, you know, be creative, but also remember the fundamentals, and those are our first go-to option as opposed to,
well, and doing that too, I have to pull kids out because they're celebrating too much.
Right.
And they're getting cocky, you know, and rubbing it in the other team's face. And you can't have that either. You gotta have a well-balanced, you know.
So it's not like the real trick is balancing attitude. It is. Just seeing the highs and lows is. And let's keep it neutral.
Oh, yeah.
Let's keep it nice and steady.
I had kids hitting three-pointers and then going down to, you know, playing the air guitar and getting funky with it.
Air guitar in it down the
and, court. You know, making the in crowd laugh.
Face.
Doing
in your
that.
Face.
But yeah. You got to be able to control that too, because you got to think about the other kids that...
They're participating.
Yeah, I mean...
Trying. A lot of kids, I feel like ninth grade, you kind of have your mind made up that you want to be on the team. You want to play basketball. You know what you like. When they're younger, like... You know, second, third, fourth, fifth. They're still trying to figure out if they're any good, if this is what they want to do. And sometimes it's parent, mom and dad going, nope, you're playing.
Yeah.
Nope, you're not doing piano lessons. You're not doing the band. You're going to get your butt out there on the court and play this basketball, or get out there on the field and play this baseball and that, or that football. And sometimes that pushes the kids away. If you're overbearing about it, I know there's
and
just
if you're too strong about it, or that's what I feel.
Trying to find that nice balance and keep them interested, you know, it's almost like creating this, story that's a mystery, you know, and keep there's a little bit of mystery in it to keep them interested, you know, not be too overbearing, trying to just push them in one direction. Like, well, have you thought about this? You
know, yeah, and the real hard part is trying to figure out how to get them motivated to push themselves naturally, you know?
Right. Like,
and that's all I hope for is that, you know, like...
Do you see them a lot getting inspired by the watching videos of other great, like maybe NBA players or college players?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And this
motivation,
this day and
inspiration.
Age.
Yeah. They're kind of similar, but then they're not. It seems like, I think I've heard people break down motivation as kind of one of those things where it's like a shower. It just wears off. Like the next day you have to take another shower, you know, or at least within a couple of days, mm-hmm. you start to get funky, you know, and the same kind of thing with motivation. It's like, you might have it one day, all of a sudden, when you wake up that next day, all that's a race, and you have to restart your day, and you got to go seek it. You mm-hmm. got to get online. You got to go. You got to go to a game. You got to, you know, be around it and look for it. Look for the motivation. Look for the inspiration, and almost be on the hunt for it. And that's one thing that I've been able to do well is look and find motivation in people that inspire me, and. I think that's what got me through a lot of hard times, actually, man, for mm-hmm. myself. It's been good talking to you. I want to wrap it up. I know it's Saturday right now, and I think my lady's going to be getting off here soon. She was texting me, and I think this podcast app
blocks
everything out. So right now I'm ignoring the world, and I have no, like... phone to look at because we're recording on the phone, so I have no like cues or text messages coming in, and I'm sure, I hope nothing is pressing, but I have a feeling something's pressing. We're gonna find out when I shut this phone down. But man, thank you so much, man, for taking the time and just giving it your full attention and taking it, you know, seriously, but also being authentic, man, and just giving us, you know, myself and all the listeners, man, the best part of you, you know.
Of course, man. You've been a pretty much a brother to me from the get-go, man. So I appreciate what you do, and I support you 100% all the time, man. So thanks for having me a part of it.
100%, man. I feel the same way. If you guys ever want to connect with Andy, he's on LinkedIn, and that's his business profile on there, and you can kind of get to know him a little bit better on a professional level. And then you can find him on Facebook, the IG.
Yeah.
Just cruising with the fam. No stalkers, though. No stalkers. just feel free to reach out if got any questions, man. I've known Andy for a long time, and I don't think that he'd have any problem answering a question that you may have that is in his background, you know, of expertise. With that said, we're gonna wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and you know, we're really trying to push this Cakes No Breaks, this Cakes lifestyle. We updated the website, which is caakesunltd.com. You can go get all the merch there. And we're just trying to keep it, you know, authentic and inspiring and really stay true to the Northwest lifestyle. We have so many cool things out here that we get to experience, from snowboarding, skateboarding, skiing, go to the lake, go wakeboarding, hit the ocean up, you know, surfing. The Oregon coast can get rough. I haven't done it. First time I went surfing was in Hawaii, but another story for another day. That being said, thank you, and we will be hitting you with episode 5, hopefully here shortly. I don't know who we're going to have on here, but peace.
Peace.
See here, I think I just...